Welcome to a new episode of The Quill. Very glad and very happy to have you here with me. As you can see, today we're talking about, well, about the end of 1945 and what that meant for John and, you know, the rest of the life and his life in Transylvania, more specifically, obviously, in Cluj or around Cluj in Transylvania. We have here a very nice image. Last time we talked about Transylvania and Romania, we left somewhere in August of 1944, where things started to change rapidly. We had Romania changing tides. We have the coup of the king coming back, Michael the First, and just a lot of things happening at once all over Europe, and Germany fast losing battle after battle and ally after ally and territory after territory. We showed you how last time we showed you how Romania was attacked by the allies, with America hitting the fields in Ploiești, and you know, the Russians fighting the war on the Eastern Front in Transnistria and slowly winning. So now we're in this position where the Russians actually won in the East. Romania's oil fields were basically damaged badly in such a way that they couldn't give any help to, and they weren't any help anymore to Nazi Germany and Hitler. And considering the fact that they lost basically over a third of what was known as, you know, the oil they were using, next up was obviously the move on Hungary and Transylvania. So we have the Soviets entering, attacking Romania on August 19th, 20th, and not 11 days later, Soviet troops take Bucharest. I think last time I showed you a video about and how, you know, the Soviets were welcomed in Bucharest and how they were celebrated, and even British and one American video about talking about how much of a victory that was and how much Romanians celebrated the fact that they were unleashed from under the Nazi rule and Nazi influence. But this wasn't all fun and games, because once the Russians got to Romania, once they changed sides, anyone that once either worked or sympathized with Nazi Germany or the Axis were brutally and fastly murdered right then and there. And obviously, since you know, the USSR wanted to control that part of Europe, they wanted to have as many sympathizers and get rid of the nuisance as fast as possible. So they swiftly killed thousands of people that might have worked either willingly or unwillingly for, you know, well, the Axis. And well, now that we have Russia taking over Romania, that meant that the next step was obviously the assault on Transylvania, considering that the Allies declared the decisions of the Nazis and back then the Italians to be null and void, and Transylvanian land be given back to Romania. So that meant that the Romanian army together with the Russian army crossed the Carpathians, got into Transylvania and started fighting the Nazis and the Hungarians and pushing them back battle after battle after battle. But considering the fact that we're already in 1944, that meant that John, my grandfather, was at this age 9, about to become 10 years of age. And as the title suggests, it is sort of a nightmare, because when he was 5, he lost his father to the fact that the World War started again, and he just couldn't take it and fled, because they changed hands and went from Romania to Transylvania and to Hungary, and now the there was another change and there was another war coming back to Cluj, but this time in a much bigger and more brutal force than when the Hungarians occupied Transylvania, which meant obviously carnage and you whatever dangers there were before, where for example my grandfather didn't know whom to trust and who to, you know, how to protect himself against whom. That meant that this was bigger and scarier, because at this point you also had Russians, whereas before you just had Hungarians and Romanians basically committing atrocities against each other. Here you have also the Russians, which obviously the Russian couldn't give less of a shit. And today we're gonna get into that, because as you can see, the pictures I'm showing you are from the railway station in Cluj. So coming from the east and southeast meant that Cluj was in big danger, since and the people living there, even Romanians, were in big danger, because as you know, Nazis went, and not just Nazis but in this case Hungarians together with Nazis, as they retreated they used to burn down cities, because as you burn them down they have nothing to gain or find there, whether it's ammunition or food or any kind of supplies that they then can use, capture and move onwards with their attack. So through whatever city they moved and fought, the Hungarians and the Nazis that were retreating, they were burning cities down to leave nothing behind. And that meant that my grandfather was in grave danger by the age of 9 again, but this time either because the Hungarians would either burn whatever home he had down and kill him and his family, or they would, the Russians would and Romanians would come and kill them by either mistake or, you know, casualties of war. Since no one really cared in this instance, as we talked about previously, even though Romania and Hungary were on the same side back in the day of the Axis, they still committed atrocities one against the other. That meant that their Romanians were being killed off one by one by one by one, and so were Hungarians in, you know, Romania, because of course what you're doing to me, I'm gonna do to you. And that's basically what happened for a long period of time, and this wasn't gonna be the end of it. So let's continue with that and talk about how they were slowly moving towards Cluj. It took them, like, if I'm not mistaken, and if I'm not, you know, that daft, it took them like a few days to get from from Bucharest to Transylvania, and then attack Budapest, because the Budapest offensive started with lasted for a few months, from October to February 1945. So, you know, it started quite late in the year, but for them it took a few days to actually get to Transylvania and start the war there, and slowly, you know, move towards Hungary and what now present day Hungary is, you know, so they could actually assault Budapest. So it was something terrible to kind of witness. I can't really imagine. Now let's actually get into it, because from August, when the Russians took over Bucharest and started killing any Nazi sympathizer, as you would, then they, in September, so a few weeks later, the Allies voided the Second Vienna Award, giving Romania back Transylvania. That meant, as I just said, that the Soviet government, together with a joint military operation with Romania, would fight against Germany and Hungary, with obviously the support of the Americans and all the Allied forces wanting to smother Nazi Germany. So, starting with September of 1944, things started moving as quickly as possible, having already many fights, like, you know, the Soviets pushing further and further west, the Allies, especially France, England and the US, pushing further and further west, with, you know, having the Soviets occupy Estonia by the end of September, and having you know, even the Polish, the Warsaw uprising happening, but yet failing in October. So it wasn't all, you know, all roses, because how could it be, right? But here we have a few things that were happening. Once this whole thing was put in motion, it took less than a month it took less than a month for this joint operation to actually go ahead and move towards Transylvania. Sorry if I'm a bit like woozy and stuff like that, but I'm actually also trying to be as accurate as possible, so I'm here, you know, piecing every detail that I have together, trying to, you know, give you the right information and to actually give you an accurate representation, or as accurate as I can make it. So between going a bit back, between August 20th and August 29th, the Soviets basically took the victory over Romania and then marched into Bucharest. Then, you know, they pushed against the Germans and the Hungarians. During the battle between Romania and the Soviets, King Michael succeeded in his coup d'etat, and of course Antonescu was killed and some of his generals were also punished. But you know, it still had a long way to go. But due to Romania's switch, that also caused Bulgaria to, you know, withdraw from the Axis, which is just very, very kind of weird. The first kind of there were a few things happening now, because as Germany was smothered, Romania was basically now winning and getting on the favorable side of you know, the winning side, and that meant that of course they would get Transylvania back and much more. But that also meant that they would get communism, sadly. So yeah, let's just, I don't know why I'm stalling so much to get to it, but let's get into the bombardment of Cluj. Now you can imagine that from September to October, when Romania actually got the territory back, it was something weird, because of course it was an uphill battle, it was a really hard battle, but since Germany and the Hungarians were losing battle after battle, it felt quite easier, so to speak. So, you know, as easy as it might have seemed, the atrocities that were happening on both sides were grave. And of course, if you ask anyone, they'll say, oh well, it's war, of course you can expect that, of course these things happen, but you don't really have accurate, or no one is willing to kind of accept these things and tell you that yeah we did this, we killed this many people, and it's well known, because of course no one wants to do that, because that means they're, you know, bad, and why would you want to be bad, right? So now, of course, with that said, we have a world now where everyone can be anyone's enemy. It's a mess right now in the middle of the war, and the Battle of Cluj was more of a precision strike, or at least after so many years of war and terrible terrible, you know, fighting. It felt so like it was something out of, you know, textbooks, just like with the Romanian oil fields in 1944, so 43, I think. I forgot, sorry. it's something terrifying to really think about, because, you know, it's one thing to kind of hear about stories or even the news, hearing about, you know, a stabbing or, you know, a mugging or some kind of attack like that, it's terrifying. That one is terrifying, at least for me, to try to actually put myself into the shoes of anyone that has to or had to live through such a traumatic event. Now imagine that on a much larger scale, where either side could simply do whatever and without any kind of mercy or thought, destroy whatever life you had in one moment, or simply take it away out of sheer pettiness, because why wouldn't you? It's war and it's not your life to really lose when you retreat or flee, or when you attack and win, obviously, right? And you don't really care or think about the books or the aftermath. Look at what other nations, how other nations are seen, even the Americans, even the British, that were doing horrible stuff, for example, in Asia until the war and after, and Africa too. It's something atrocious, and the Romanians weren't any better either, with taking part in the Holocaust and having slaves until very recently after the First World War, and a bunch of gruesome stuff. Of course, they weren't saints either, but the Romanians, for example, deny or would like to deny their involvement in the Holocaust as much as possible, and the atrocities they committed in southern and northern Transylvania after 1944 as well. But of course, so would the Hungarians deny the same thing to what they did to Romanians, to have that, you know, higher percentage of ethnicity in the region that can kind of give them claim, because that's what you do when you want to conquer, right? You basically take, do, and create whatever monstrosity in the war, because no one's gonna give a shit if you're gonna win. And look at what happened, for example, with the people Stalin killed, how many more he killed than Hitler. But because he was on the winning side, we were more lenient on it, thus having to go through, well, the Cold War and the World War II ending before, you know, basically any precise resolution. That's why we even, I think that's, this is my pure opinion, I think this is also why we still have this kind of tension here in the region and with people like Putin. Now, hopefully no one's gonna come poison me or stuff like that, because I'm just telling you my opinion. But you can imagine that if World War II would have continued, it would have been Allies versus Russia, and Russia alone, basically. Because obviously, you know, you had what was Axis with Italy, Germany, most of Germany, and a few other countries, and you know, you had Romania, Bulgaria, Poland for the side of the Russians. But if that war would have continued, I think this world would have been a totally different one, and a totally different kind of mentality would exist today. And especially if the nukes were to be involved a bit more than just Japan. So now you have this siege over Cluj, you have this attack basically where no one can really blame you for trying to run or hide. My grandfather, I remember him telling me, and I still remember when he basically told me that these were the time where he actually was afraid that he might die, and he remembered these things clearly, that he had to run on the fields and through the forests of Cluj, because on the one hand you had Nazis and Hungarians retreating and fighting, and the Soviets and Romanians, you had bombardments and bombs dropping everywhere, and it was something truly horrible having to witness that. And you have there the picture of the railroad in Cluj, and this is just one of them. I'm gonna show you a few more, and I'm gonna show you also some other videos if you're watching live or on YouTube. If you are listening, you can go afterwards and watch them, but either way I'm gonna still describe them, so don't stop the podcasts if you're listening into the audio form. We're still gonna go and make this a pleasant ride for you too. Now, with that said, you can imagine how terrible it must be to have bombs explode day after day after day after day for 10 days, for 11 days, for a month around you, because that's what just happens. Can you see this? It's let me pull up if I can find an image of the actual the way it looks now. Let me hear. I think this is a more, yes, no, this isn't a very recent. Where is the most recent one? Yes, here it is. No, because they changed that. That's how it looked. Yeah. We're gonna have a few photos here for you to, you know, like, look at and compare between what it is now, and let's see if I can find a higher res, because that one doesn't really do it justice, honestly. So this is an older one, but it's gonna have to do for now, because this is a really, really old one. It's kind of a cool one. We have here one from, like, I don't know, the 1900s, sometime in the 1900s, probably before, might be even before World War I. it's or from World War, the Second World War. It's written in Hungarian too. So this is how the station looked before the bombardment, which is honestly the building looks gorgeous from the outside. I love it too, because I do, and I'm biased because I live here, but it's still a gorgeous building in my opinion. And this is how, let's see, sorry, this is how it looked like a few years ago before they renovated it, at least the pavement and stuff like that. The place, it looks much better now, and I'm gonna show you an even more recent picture, because that's like from a few years ago, and this one is like from a year or so ago. This is how it looks now, with the trees, with benches. It's very nicely done, and you have, you know, you can walk here, and there are taxis nicely, and all that. It's really gorgeous. But you see, this is the gorgeousness that was the railway station, and this is how it turned out with the bombardment. And you have to know that they came from that way, basically, which I think it's they came from the east, so directly the war started on the hills where my grandfather lived, on the east of Krušná Polka. So he lived there in a village about like 10-20 kilometers away, on some gorgeous hills there. And you know, obviously you start hearing like planes, you hear bombing everywhere, boom boom boom, because you have to think that the Hungarians and the Nazis didn't want them to attack the railway station, because obviously that's a main line of supplies, and getting supplies and getting ammo and weapons and everything you need. So you have to defend that and the airport. So when the Romanians and the Russians got here, they attacked, they came from the east, and they basically split. One was the direction of the railway station, the other must have been the military base and the airport further up, further north, I think, or south, north, I don't know, one of the other. But they're basically very perpendicular, so to speak, where the railway station is, let's say about here. You have it here, and to get to the airport you basically have to go a lot of way straight up, basically straight up and a bit to the left. So they came from the east, slowly approached from the east to bombard. So when they entered the Cluj, and when the fighting began, it began on the hills outside of Cluj, exactly where my grandpa lived. And considering that these are the images of what's happened to the railway station through the bombardment, and to the trains, here you have, and buildings, and these are the buildings on one of the streets that goes directly to the railway station. Today is called Strada Horia. Here you have another picture in front of the railway station, and Jesus Christ. And they didn't stop here with the bombardment. They went even further west in that region, because, for example, the house I lived in until a few years ago was built on a place that was bombarded and that was last lived by the railway station and by the, you know, train tracks themselves. So you can imagine that they didn't just stop here at the railway station. Here you have also what I assume are either Romanian or Hungarian people, I mean soldiers, and Romanian or Hungarian fellow with the wreckage that they survived. And Jesus Christ, just look at this. It was absolutely tragic, honestly. Yeah. So, as you can see, it was something really, really tragic in a sense, because you have war, and war is always terrible in that sense. So, considering the images we just saw, which for me are haunting in some way, because you have to imagine that there must have been people there. There must have been soldiers trying to defend that place, and there must have been also innocent people caught in the crossfire and bombardments of Cluj. And of course, you have to think that how can a 9-year-old or 10-year-old try to survive something like the bombardment of your home, of the place you live? You have to see animals running like mad, people you know and love die and caught in a crossfire, trying to hide somewhere, anywhere, and get as far away as possible, because you don't really have what they had. They didn't really have what you have today, where you can just get that alert on your phone and take cover. You have to imagine that the soldiers, the Hungarian soldiers and the Nazi soldiers, didn't really give a flying shit about anyone but themselves, and that meant that they wouldn't probably tell anyone about the fact that they were gonna be attacked. Remember that even the Americans dropped leaflets with the fact that they were about to nuke both Hiroshima and Nagasaki when they did it. So it was, you know, basically the enemy that was warning them first and foremost, and then, you know, war happens. But you can imagine that when you wanna take city by city by city, you don't wait to actually warn anyone that, hey, we're coming for you. They know you're coming, they just don't know when you're gonna strike, so you always are gonna strike on as much surprise as possible, trying to, you know, catch them with their guard down, or hit them where they don't expect you to. So bomb after bomb after bomb falls on the ground, bullets flying everywhere and anywhere. My grandfather runs for the hills, tries to save himself, sees where the planes are coming from, sees where people are shooting from, and runs and runs and runs between bullets, bombs, explosion, mines, dead animals, humans, loved ones, blown away. He runs and runs and runs. As far and wide as he can see. Keeps running and running, trying to find a way to escape. Trying to find a way to survive, because he might see the end of the war. He might get to live another day. He might get to get through all of it. He might. And he might. So he runs, screaming, crying, terrified, petrified, alone. Thinking that I'm gonna die. Everyone's gonna die. I might return to home. Or I might just keep running and running and running and never looking back. Never looking back at what it is, what it was, what it could have been. Just running for my life. I just keep running. And I might save myself. God, I might save myself. I might run and run and run. And if I fall, I wanna fall in love. If I fall, I wanna fall in love. I don't wanna fall to my death. I wanna fall in love. I wanna run and run and run to escape it. To escape to a normal life, to escape to a place where there is no war, where I can trust. I want to trust someone. I want to live with someone peacefully. I don't want this. I don't want any of this. I just want to run. So he ran and ran and ran through the hills, through the battles, through the bullets, bombs, mines and guns, knives, animals and loved ones. He ran. God damn it, he ran. Terrified. How can you not be terrified? 5 sisters and brothers might have been dead. Mother, he might have been an orphan by now. When the planes fly, when the bombs drop, the bullets hit to kill. Friendly is no more, because this is war. Wherever thought of peace and serenity remains, it's in death or in escape, but it's never in war, because war has no serenity, has no peace, has no place for love. There is no love in war. That's not how you fight. That's not how you live. You shouldn't live in war. He wanted, well, he couldn't have wanted, but who wishes to be born in a war? Who wishes that the best years of anyone's life, well, the best years that should be in anyone's life, the most innocent of years, the most peaceful of years, who wants them to be war? wants them to be drawn in sorrow, fear, paranoia that anyone that might come knocking at your door might kill you. Hell, they might kill you anyway. Who knows, maybe the neighbor now has gotten something broken in his mind. Since it's war, anything's possible. Anything's allowed. Just like in love, they say. Anything's allowed in love and war. Well, I don't think so. I know my grandpa didn't think so. You can't love the way you do war, and you can't war the way you love. No matter what you say. But war breaks people, especially children, especially those that shouldn't witness it, and they shouldn't. No one should witness wars like this. For a cause, what cause? What cause had World War II? For whom? It was against a few, by many, but it had no cause. No real war has a real cause. This was madness. This was simple madness. So at the age of 10, in his third year of school, when Cluj got bombarded, he dropped out of school. John had dropped out of school. I don't blame him. How can you blame a child for wanting to drop out of school that was taught in a foreign language? He had to learn, forced by foreign entities in a place he called home until a few years ago. And not just that, but then your people that you don't even know that they're your people come back and bomb you and bomb you and bomb you and bomb you. And they fight and kill anyone and anything. Just as the Russians killed in Bucharest and all over Romania, the communists only kill just like that, they were killing in Transylvania. This was no mistake, because let me tell you, Romania didn't get Transylvania back after October 1944. They didn't get it in November 1944. Mm-mm. The Soviets expelled the Romanian administrator from northern Transylvania in November 1944. They didn't allow Romanians to take back over Transylvania until March of 1945. Why? Because this was a very smart move on their part. What do I mean by that? I mean that they used Transylvania basically as a ground zero for their efforts against Hungary and the Czech Republic and whatever was east of Romania. So, considering that the territory was about to go back, they had also the power to, you know, keep control of it for another few months until the victory was secured against the Germans, because you can think that, and you can obviously also think the same way, because you might think, well, if we give them back now, if we give them back now the territory that we're supposed to come get back to Romania in, on September 12th, 1944, by Allied decree, they might just fuck up and lose it again. And you don't want the Germans or the Hungarians to push back again. So Romania didn't get their Transylvania back. But with that said, together with, you know, Russia, they were flying and bombarding further and further until they got, obviously, the whole of Transylvania back, and the march on Budapest began, which started in October of 1944, as stated before. So yeah, it was something. It was it was, of course, you can feel for also the Hungarians. I mean, you should, for the Hungarians that lived, you know, in the cities before Budapest. I don't think many of them actually asked for this war either, but then again, you know, the Austro-Hungarian Empire was a thing until like a few decades ago, and before World War II. And okay, that was the Romanian Air Force against, you know, the Hungarian Army in 1944. And here we have this video is from Duna, Hungarian TV station. This footage is from 1944 with how they were basically defending Budapest back then during the assault, which you can see here, as them stating that, well, I don't know Hungarian, but someone translated it loosely, that they were fighting until the last drop of blood and last, you know, tried to defend against the Bolsheviks and these monsters that are the Russians. But of course, there were also Romanians in this army as they were pushing forward north. North and west. So as you can see here, more bombardment, more fires, more basically tyranny and absolute tragedy of war, where people would die and die and die. And this lasted until February 1945. So you can imagine that, of course, they wouldn't give, you know, Romania back Transylvania, because Hungary capitulated basically until just, you know, the spring of 1945, which is something. But it took them a long while, because if they were to get after Budapest, they were to hit, you know, the Budapest, the Hungarian oil fields, and that would have been the end. And so it was. But we're gonna talk about this next next episode of The Quill, because it's really interesting what happened afterwards, what happened in 1944, what happened obviously after 1944. And here we have, for example, King Mihai I getting to Cluj on March 12, 1945, a few days before Transylvania was about to be given back to Cluj, to Romania. I said Cluj because I'm looking at these images of Cluj and the railway station. So with that said, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I am getting better and better and trying to get better and better and at this, and well, hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, all of that fun stuff. And if you listened in audio form, don't forget to, you know, rate and do all that fun stuff. Tell your friends about it, your families, and anyone that kind of wants to learn about an interesting story about World War II from a different place in time that might have not been talked about so much. But with that said, I am your host. Thank you very much, and see you next Thursday with the epilogue and the end of World War II, and then we're getting into the meat, trying to kind of end this season of the Quill podcast on a high note before getting into the real story of, you know, well, my grandfather's life. And you can see these as a kind of character building and all that fun stuff. With that said, again, thank you very much for watching, listening. Bye.